Are you interested in pursuing destination weddings? Well, today we have Jennifer Stein of Destination I Do, and she is going to dive into how you can do that.
Yes, from running Destination I Do for almost 2 decades, a wedding blog, wedding website, podcast, was a print magazine, and so much more. Jennifer is an expert on all things destination weddings and gives great advice on not only how vendors and couples can pull together a destination wedding team, but also just be ready to work those destination weddings and work with vendors from all over the world. So tune in.
You're listening to Dare to Develop, a podcast for creatives. I'm Christine Herman.
And I'm Ashley Baumgartner, and we are two hybrid wedding photographers that dub ourselves work wives.
With a passion for developing community and daring to take risks in business and art, we want to bring you along on a journey.
The journey of artists, makers, business professionals, and more who want to level up their businesses by daring greatly and developing community.
So let's get started.
Welcome back to Dare to Develop. We're so excited today to have Jennifer Stein, owner and editor-in-chief of Destination I Do.
We're so excited to hear from you all about developing practices to book more destination weddings. Thanks so much for being here with us, Jennifer.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. So before we get started talking all about destination weddings, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are as a person before we dive into business?
Oh, goodness. Okay, so I am a mother of two and a fur baby. I have a puppy who is named Blue, and she's like literally my emotional support pet. I'm a huge animal lover. I've been married for almost 18 years, and we've been together for 25. So it's like, I'm literally can't remember life before my husband. It's like kind of crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
I live in Arizona, and I'm an absolute addict to sun. And so I'm one of those weird people that whenever it starts to rain, I kind of am like, oh my God, it's raining. Because being in Arizona, like it never rains here. So we kind of get super excited when it's a thunderstorm. Yeah, I've owned Destination I Do for 19 years and it is my first baby. And it's something that I'm just wildly passionate about even to this day. I am like a complete dork when it comes to destination weddings. Like people start talking about it and I can barely control myself. Like I just get so excited about travel and, you know, just all the beautiful things that is happening in the wedding industry today is just really cool to be a part of it. So
yes, I love that. So tell us a little bit about your journey into the wedding world and starting Destination I Do.
So I kind of fell madly in love with the idea of a destination wedding when I was about 14. My mom worked for a company called America West Airlines, and she was able to get us like somehow, because we didn't have any money, she was able to get us like free tickets to Hawaii. And so our whole family traveled to Maui and we were staying at a resort, and I just looked out and it was like the sun was setting and I was just completely enamored with how beautiful the destination was. And I saw this couple getting married on the beach. And it was just an elopement, just the two of them. But the romance and like the intimacy and just the everything about it, I just was like completely taken aback. And after that experience, I worked on a golf course. And so through my years there, I got hired on as the assistant wedding planner. And so I would watch like wedding after wedding after wedding every Saturday night. You know, it was almost like the same chicken dinner in a ballroom experience. The only thing that changed was like the napkin color and the couple. Like that was basically it. And I just thought to myself, like, this isn't what I want when I get married. Like I know I'm not alone in that. I knew at that point that kind of sea of sameness was not necessarily like that everybody would want that. And so after college, I got my degree in journalism and small business. So I went from college to working for a publishing company. But there was like this entrepreneurial spirit in me that had taken hold when I was like a little kid. Like when, you know, when you're little and you're like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it was like, oh, I want to be a ballerina or a teacher or a nurse. I was like, I want to own like an empire. I want to have like a media company. I want to live in a brownstone in New York City with my Jack Russell Terrier. I'm never getting married. I'm going to drink white wine and eat charcuterie until the day I die. Like that was what I envisioned for my future.
Carrie Bradshaw moment.
Total Carrie Bradshaw moment. And so for me, like the entrepreneurial spirit had just always kind of been in my heart, you know? And so, yeah, when I started at the publishing company, I just fell madly in love with publishing, just going from having this, you know, concept to a physical product in a magazine or a website or even a trade show, because there was trade shows as well at the company I worked for. And just that whole process, the collaboration, the different departments, you know, we had traffic and editorial and sales and everybody working together for this common goal and producing something out of nothing, just really, I just thought it was amazing. And so my mom and I had talked about starting our own company as destination wedding planners. Like back to that 14-year-old girl in me who was watching those people say I do in Maui, like that. So it was like a lot of different things kind of coming to fruition. And so my mom was like, you know, I don't want to become a wedding planner because I'm going to retire with your dad. I don't want to have like the weekday meeting or like weeknight meetings and my weekends, you know, where I'm having to physically, you know, help the bride down the aisle or the grooms or whatever. And so she was like, I really want to do something that's more 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And so she actually came up with the idea of Destination I Do. Because she said, well, what if we take your love of destination weddings and your experience in the publishing industry and combine them? And so that was June of 2004. By September of 2004, I had quit my job. Yeah. And I'd given my notice. And we had within like, I think a month, we had a website. By the following May, so May of 2005, we had a printed magazine in 30 states, and within a year, every state in the country, and then 12 countries outside of the U.S.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
So it was fast and furious. I was broke as a joke, but let me tell you.
Well, you were living the dream also. Yes.
I mean, I literally exhausted my entire bank account and maxed out my credit cards. It was the only time I ever did that. But I, you know, it was one of those things that I'm like, if I don't do this now, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? I could fall on my face, you know, okay, I got myself into a little bit of debt, but I can go get a job at a corporation again. And, you know, if I'm not going to do it now, I'm never going to do it. And it was before I had kids. It's before I was married. So I'm like, if you asked me if I would ever do it again, I wouldn't do it now. Like, I would never take those kinds of risks now being a parent and the amount of stress and emotional toll it took to get it off the ground. But the experiences and the people that I've met through this industry, I wouldn't change it for the world. It's like literally one of the best decisions I've ever made was starting Destination I Do.
So it started with the website and the magazine. Can you tell us a little bit about what Destination I Do is now? What does it all encompass for our listeners in case they're not familiar?
Yes. So in May of 2022, so literally, what is that? 18 years? I don't know. I'm terrible at math. I'm a good writer, but I'm really bad at math. I had tutors all through high school and college. So in May of 2022, we made the environmentally responsible choice to stop printing. It also got so prohibitively expensive and difficult to create like a really quality product. The paper mill we'd worked with for the entire time that we were in business actually shut down. And so there was the paper industry just kind of fell on its side. Retail's been on its side. It's really hard to sell product in retail space right now. I don't care if it's a, you know, beautiful dress or a pair of shoes or a magazine. It's just not what it used to be. So we actually took ourselves off out of print May of 2022. We started a podcast, which we are in our third season. So we started a podcast in January 2020. So we've got that, and we just relaunched our website and we love it. It's so much better. It's just very user-friendly. It's just got loads of great content, beautiful contributions from different wedding photographers and planners, and lots of great information about planning a destination wedding. So, you know, we also do on the side, I help a lot of hotel brands and whatnot kind of create custom things if they need it. If it's a photo shoot or if it's, you know, an actual like full-blown custom magazine. We do a lot of custom publishing projects for different clients. So that's actually like, it's one of my favorite parts of my job is creating content for other people. It just because it's new and it's different and it's like, right. You get to kind of get in there and just get really creative. So yeah.
go to probably all these cool spots and not a bad gig. So what type of destination weddings do you publish on Destination I Do? Is it just everything? Is there anything you really focus on?
So I would say we really publish almost anything. What we are always looking for is, first and foremost, I say it's like the P's, right? So it's sense of place. That's always the biggest thing. So if someone's like, we did a beautiful destination wedding, but everything happened inside a ballroom. Like that could happen in like Detroit or Cincinnati. Yeah. Like, you know, that's not really the kind of content that we look for, is anything that's like, unless you're in like a Duomo in Italy or something like that, that might be a little different. But if it's like a standard ballroom, like we're probably not going to publish it. We will publish weddings no matter where in the world it happened. So a lot of people think, well, it's in the United States, so it's not a destination wedding. That is not how we classify a destination wedding. I actually don't know that many media outlets would classify it that way. We classify it, the couple has to live 2 hours away from where they're getting married. So it could be something that is like you live in San Francisco and you're going to Yosemite, or you live in, you know, Arizona and you're going to, you know, Las Vegas or San Diego or something like that. And so it doesn't matter where in the world it is, as long as it has a sense of place, it has beautiful photography, there's your next P, and a sense of personality. You know, we really don't want kind of that cookie cutter look. We really want the couple's personality to shine through. So in their details, in their style. We love an LGBTQ+ wedding. We love people of color, different cultures. I don't know that we've ever been sent an Indian wedding and not published it, I'll be honest. Just because there's so much color, there's so much excitement, there's so many details that it's just like a dream come true when we get an Indian wedding. And a lot of Indian weddings now are destination weddings. So that makes it even easier to say yes to. So yeah.
Love that. So let's hop into the vendor world of destination weddings. Do you think that, just from your perspective of being in the industry for 20 years, like, do you think it is a good thing for vendors to pursue doing destination work? You know, there was a trend a couple years ago where everyone was like, I want to be a destination wedding planner. I want to be a destination wedding photographer. And then there's people who might be more homebodies and have kids and are just like, hey, I only want to shoot in my area. So we'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it really depends on the person. I think it depends on what does their lifestyle look like. Are they a brand new mom who has a really hard time leaving their newborn, and you know, it doesn't make sense for them for the next few years to dive into that space? Or are they really far from an airport, and logistically for them to get, you know, themselves to the airport and then on a flight, and it's realistically they can really only do it like once in a while because it's so far away. I think it really depends on each person and also what their goals are. You know, destination wedding work is not for everyone. It can be really stressful. There's a lot of unknowns. And especially in this marketplace with travel being what it is, things are, yeah. I don't know if all airlines are doing this, you guys, but I've noticed, because we just started booking flights for a photo shoot we're doing in Mexico. Well, I will get on and I'll search for flights. I'll send it, you know, we'll have it sent to you, whoever, you know, if it's the model or, you know, one of our vendor team members. And it's like, okay, you know, here's your flights and then here are your options. And the next thing I know, those same options, when we go to book them like a day later, once we've heard back, now they're like $200 more. I am seeing it like before I thought it was just like Volaris. Now it's American Airlines. I'm like, I think there's something that they're doing where if you search something, and it's probably illegal and they're probably going to get in trouble for it. We'll probably all like lawsuit at some point, but I'm seeing it like across the board. And I used to only see it with certain airlines, but now we're seeing it. And I'm like, why are these flights going up so much? And yeah, it's just the deal. So anyway, depending on, you know, your flexibility as far as what your personal life looks like. If you can be away over weekends and, you know, if you're doing a destination wedding, you're going to be gone for multiple days. Sometimes the couple wants to hire you for the entire experience. So is it okay for you to be away from your family, your friends, your loved ones for an extended period of time. It may be, you know, a few days or it may be a week. So I think just those are questions someone would have to ask themselves. And are you up for the challenge? Because book flights get canceled. You know, travel can be, it's just a whole nother level to your business that you have very little control over. So you have to really know like the nuances of what it's like to travel. Make sure you thrive in those environments. Are you going to be the person who's like bummed forever because your flight to Ireland was either canceled, now you're having to scramble to find a new flight? Or are you going to be one of those people who just rolls with it and is like, cool, I get to hang out in the Delta lounge for the next, you know, 3 hours until I figure this out? You know, those are the things I think just every person is different. And if you don't thrive in that environment, like, why put yourself through it? Because it's not a vacation. Doing destination work is not a vacation. And I think what happens sometimes, and this is every industry is guilty of it, but I think especially the wedding industry, people see things online. They see the person at the beautiful Italian villa sipping a cappuccino, you know, eating some panna cotta, and they're thinking, I want that. That looks amazing. Well, yeah, but they're not on vacation. What they didn't see was getting there. They didn't see, you know, being schlepped around like you're a, you know, a herd of cattle and, you know, having some smelly man next to you on the airplane for 7 hours or, you know, driving around in a rented car that you lost your way 10 different times and now you can't figure it out because everything's in Italian, you know? So there's like, there's a lot of things I think that it looks really great online and everyone's like, I want to do a destination, you know, or I want to be a destination wedding vendor. But in reality, there's so many things that can happen that, you know, the panna cotta and the cappuccino overlooking, you know, the Tuscan countryside, that may be a little tiny piece of it, but that's not what you're experiencing the whole time. You're also working in, you know, different conditions and trying to understand different cultures and things. And I'm not trying to dissuade anyone from doing it. I just also want to be a realist and acknowledge that it really isn't for every person.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, we romanticize so much on social media. Yes. That people are like, oh my God, this looks amazing. Or we want to just keep up with the Joneses because like that's what you think you're supposed to be doing instead of really like diving deep in yourself and be like, is this actually for me? Because it can get real crazy. And like you said, it's work. Mm-hmm. And like people, I had just gotten back from Mexico from a wedding and was like, how was it? I'm like, I worked the whole time.
You're not drinking,
not hanging out, but I worked the whole time. So it was great. I love the experience. I love destination weddings, but I think we really romanticize it as just, sorry, I only was that. We really romanticize this as a wedding industry. And really, it's like you said, per person, we really have to think about it.
Well, and I think there's a way to take, like, if you maybe want to dip your toe in destination wedding work, but you, by and large, your business is based in a specific destination in your hometown, right? And you want to just kind of see what the destination wedding industry is like. And you want to really take advantage of being able to travel. Like I always recommend to people, if you're going to go to a destination and your flights and everything is taken care of until the point where the destination wedding is over, like extend the stay for a few days and really get to go, you know, walk a city or jump on a bike and like, you know, do a wine tour through the south of France. Like those are the reasons if you're going to become a destination wedding planner or photographer or whatever. You know, there are ways to make it so that it is part of your personal life as well, and that you are being able to just enjoy those destinations and spaces that you're visiting on your own time. You know, that is a possibility. And again, it totally depends on, are you single? Are you married? Are you with kids? Are you, do you have an aging parent that you're taking care of? Or, you know, there's a thousand different scenarios, but.
Exactly. Well, I want to know, did you end up having a destination wedding after your dream as a 14-year-old?
But of course. Not bad. Yeah. Yes. And it's funny because we had actually planned on doing Maui. It's like, okay, that 14, 15-year-old in me was like, we had to do Maui. And when we started researching it, that was our goal. That was exactly what we were doing. And then I started really looking at who I wanted there. And what that looked like for them. And my whole family, for the most part, with the exception of a few relatives, live in New York or Connecticut. And so
That is
that's a far trip, and it's expensive. And, you know, I mean, it's not easy to get to. And my husband's family is from Indiana, and that it was, you know, similar situation for a lot of them. And so we really started breaking it down. We were like, gosh, the expense, the time it's going to take for people to get there. My grandmother had Alzheimer's. Another family had Parkinson's. So, you know, we didn't have people that were just going to jump on a plane and, you know, hike to the top of a waterfall either. So we decided, we kind of did a compromise, but it didn't feel like a compromise in the end. We went to a beautiful destination in San Diego called Del Mar. And we got married on the like cliffside in Seagrove Park, and then had our reception at L'Auberge Del Mar. And it was seriously like I felt like a guest at my own wedding. Love it. I had so much fun. Our guests had so much fun. And part of it was because we did the destination wedding at the end and everyone had kind of hung out all week. We did like surf lessons and golf, and some of us went to Disneyland. And I mean, we like really made the most of it. And it truly felt like a vacation for the whole group. And so by the time the wedding rolled around, everybody knew each other. Like, let me just tell you, there are some things that happened. Like, somebody got pregnant at our wedding.
Oh,
two family members, one from my side, one from his side. I will not say who, because there could be a chance that someone could hear this. And then
you're like, this list.
I literally will be disowned from the entire family. Like, they hooked up. My best friend and my cousin hooked up. Like, it got crazy. Like, absolutely crazy. Someone the next morning called my husband. He goes, man, I don't even know what happened. And this is what do you mean? He goes, I woke up. And there was a burrito stuck to the wall of our hotel room. Like, it got absolutely wild. Like, people partied and had so much fun. Like, I'm still learning about things that happened. Like, 18 years later, I'm still hearing stories. So, yeah, it was a really fun time.
Yeah. And I think what's great, kind of like what you talked about, by the end of when you had the wedding, everyone was so familiar and friendly, and it probably just adds to experience of all the vendors who are there, that everyone knows everybody and is nice, and just kind of adds to that ambiance of the day. So,
mm-hmm. Yep, it definitely did. And I knew, being in the industry for a few years before we got married, like I knew my photographer and I knew my DJ and I knew like several different vendors that were there. So it almost felt like I got to hang out with my friends, even though, you know, they weren't necessarily like personal friends, but I knew them in more than just like a, hey, how's it going? You're hired kind of thing, which was really cool.
Yeah. I also did a destination wedding to Italy. So I totally.
Girl, oh, you got to tell us about that.
Oh, same thing. We did the whole couple days beforehand with everyone hanging out. So by the time the wedding was going on, it was just absolutely magical. And like all my good friends came to like shoot it and like do the florals and coordinate. So I really had like a good group of people surrounding us, and it was absolute perfection. So I always am like, do destination.
I know. I think when you do it, when you personally have either been to a great destination wedding or had one yourself, It feels like there's just so much more that a couple gets out of it than, and I'm not saying like, I know I've been to plenty of hometown weddings that were absolutely killer and they were wonderful events and the couple had a great time. But I do think the thing that a destination wedding brings that regular weddings, hometown weddings don't, is just that vacation feel. People are typically, once they get there, they may bitch and moan beforehand, like, I can't believe you're asking me to do this, you know? Like, that happens and it's going to happen. But usually those are the people who have the best time because their expectations are so low and they feel like, how dare you ask me to like spend my vacation and my money and blah, blah, blah. But then those are the ones that they get there and they're like, oh my God, they get it. Like, once it's over, they get it. And they're like, my grandmother, may she rest in peace, was one of the people, not the one with Alzheimer's, but my other grandmother. She was one who was not a fan of the idea. And by the end of it, she came up to me and she goes, this has been the best week of my life.
Oh, I love that.
I'm like, there you go, Grams.
You're welcome.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I feel like you're almost plucking people out of their life to put them wherever you're having the wedding. And it's not just, you know, your bridesmaids rolling up to the hotel the night before with, you know, their work laptop and everything they need to get done and, you know, their kids texting them and all of that. And so I feel like you said, it gets people in the vacation mindset.
It does. And who doesn't love vacation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My friends still talk about it to this day, how amazing it was. I'm like, you're welcome again.
Where in Italy was it?
It was in Tuscany. So about 45 minutes south of Siena.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, I love Tuscany.
It was great.
And the wine, the food, everything. Oh, take me back.
Same. So we talked a little bit about like why, if we think vendors should be doing it, what are some of like the pros? And we talked a little bit about like the hardships, but like pros and cons of destination wedding work.
So I'd say the pros are definitely that you get to travel the world. You get to experience different cultures, different foods, different spaces. And there's like that sense of adventure that's really addicting. And like you get that travel bug and it kind of takes hold. And it, you know, it's hard to get rid of once you've got it. So there's, and it's just, I think it forges relationships too that are outside of maybe your comfort zone. When you are working with other vendors in a destination, it's a different vibe than if you're working with them and they're just like going back home at the end of the night. If you're all someplace, let's say it's like Bora Bora, you know, and the wedding is over or the rehearsal is over, you're going to forge different kinds of bonds with those individuals because you're kind of forced into a space together. And you're going to have conversations and linger a little longer because you're like, you know, you don't have to rush home to get laundry done or whatever. And so I think it really can create some pretty strong bonds with other vendors. It can also shed some light on vendors that you might not want to work with again because you're really kind of almost in a bit of a powder keg, I guess you will, if you know, someone has some bad habits. Maybe they're not always on time or maybe they're, you know, not exactly, they're a diva and they're always yelling at the wait staff or something like that. You know, you can learn those things over time with hometown weddings. But when you're on a destination wedding assignment, it's like a pressure cooker. So you're going to learn a lot more, a lot faster, and really forge bonds that will potentially last a lifetime. And also, I think it creates an opportunity for future work. If you are working with amazing wedding planners that do destinations, and that's, you know, they go all around the world, you might be given opportunities in other ways because they see how you're working in a destination. They see the fact that you can go with the flow. If a travel situation hits you in the face, you know what to do about it. Those kinds of things build confidence for wedding planners and they're more likely to tap you for future work. So I think that actually is a major pro for doing destination weddings.
Yeah.
And then as far as the cons, I mean, kind of like what we talked about before, If you're really type A and you need to be in control of everything, unfortunately, travel is not something you can control. You can't control the weather. You can't control if the flight is on time. You know, there are certain things that are just completely out of your control. And that can be really unnerving for some business owners. And I completely get that. So if you're one of those people and you're like, I'm going to do a destination wedding or I'm just going to get into the industry and start booking business, like maybe take a moment and just be real with yourself. And then instead book, you know, instead of going on a destination wedding and making yourself miserable, like book the trip with your other wedding vendor friends and put that out on social media and just call it a day, you know.
Hey, Christine popping in to talk a little about flat lays. If that is something that you've been thinking of and want to up your game with design, or you're a florist and want to learn more about the foundations of how to do a flat lay with florals, or you're a stationer planner, this is really for everyone. Ashley has a mini course called Foundations of Flat Lays that she is, of course, queen of flat lays. So if you are thinking of maybe diving into something like this, she really is very knowledgeable and will give you the great course of how to do a flat lay and just the background really of it. So if this is something you're thinking of, you could DM Ashley on Instagram and she will send you the link. Goodbye.
I love that.
Yeah, I know for me, you know, we talked about like lifestyle and all of that. Like I was very much like, I don't want to do destination weddings. And then I got a bit of the travel bug and now I'm sitting in the like a couple of years good. Like we live luckily so close to beautiful places that are destinations for a lot of other people like Napa and Tahoe and whatnot, that we get to see a lot of beautiful weddings that way that are destination for the couples and their families and whatnot. But Yeah, the stress of the travel definitely is an element that,
yeah,
and the extra days and whatnot adds a lot to the experience. Some good, well, some bad.
You make a really good point too. So for people that are thinking destination has to be Italy or Mexico or the Caribbean, you could live in a destination or a place within the U.S. where 2 hours away, you can get in your car and you're still doing a destination wedding. You're still getting out. You're still adventuring. You're still, you know, kind of forging relationships with people in other places. But there's a lot more control if you're able to drive to where you're going. There's times where we live so close to California, or especially Southern California. And so for me, I'm like, do I drive or fly? Because if I fly, I still have to get to the airport, right, my car, deal with TSA, wait for my flight. Hopefully it's not delayed. If it's on time, I'm still getting there. And then I have to get, you know, from the airport to my destination. So that usually takes 4 to 5 hours. It's a 5.5 hour, 6 hour drive. So it's like, and then I have my car and I love to drive. I mean, I throw on a podcast like True Crime for Days, baby. And I just listen to that and I geek out for 6 hours and, you know, do all the things. And I actually don't mind driving. And I think there's a lot of people that live close enough that it does make sense. And they could kind of still do destination work where they're not having to get on a flight. And that would be a good thing for someone who maybe wants to get into it, but doesn't want to deal with airports. Like that might be a good, you know, middle of the road situation.
Absolutely. So what, I know you said that's one great way to start exploring destination weddings. What are some tips you have for vendors that want to do destination weddings? A couple of years ago, I felt like the advice was go take a workshop in Paris and you'll get Paris content. And then you'll just start booking Paris weddings, which we know is not true for most people.
If it was only that easy, right?
That easy. I think we'd all do it at that point. But yeah, so what tips do you have for people who are looking to start getting into destination weddings, whether that's driving 3 hours or flying to Paris or Italy or Bora Bora, like you said? Man, we would both love Bora Bora wedding.
Yeah, right. Let me know. I will be your porter on that one. I will take out the bags and you can order me around. I would say, honestly, like you said, to just book a conference in Paris and get a bunch of beautiful content is not necessarily going to do it. However, I do think it's really, really important to get out there and visit the destinations that you want to work in. And before you do that, I would make it, you know, you want to treat it like a business trip. You want to, let's pretend it's a wedding photographer and you really want more wedding work in Italy, since Italy is a hot topic today. If I were that wedding photographer, I would really research the venues that I want to work with. I would research the other vendors that are of the same caliber of quality, that they are, you know, someone that I'd want to work with. And I would set appointments and actually meet with those individuals one-on-one. And while there, I would photograph the crap out of everything. If it's possible to do a photo shoot, you know, it doesn't have to be something super elaborate with, like, you know, out of this world florals or anything. But when you're showing the world that you have content from there, it shows that you've been there, you know, the landscape, you know, the light, you know, the people, you know, the culture. And so I think, you know, pick a few destinations that you really want to work in and really treat it like a research project and get to know those individuals and then stay in front of those individuals. You know, send them a thank you gift for spending time with you. Send them, you know, emails of like, hey, if you have any work coming up, I'd love to be considered. But do it authentically, not like a spam, you know, like just spamming everyone that you met just to try and get invited back. I think if you align yourself with the right professionals and the right time and all those things, and you really show on your Instagram feed or on your website that you have shot in those areas, that's going to definitely help. I would also align yourself with the right media companies. I think there's so many of us out there. I mean, between Destination ID, Carrots and Cake, Party Slate, you know, Style Me Pretty, there's so many regional different blogs and whatnot out there. Everybody's clamoring for, you know, the vendor directory or putting a blog sponsored blog post up or whatever, but you want to align yourself with the media outlets that really focus on your end user. So you've got to know who is your perfect client. You know, what are they reading? What are they using in order to do their own research? Because if it's not Wedding Wire and there's like, or you're on Wedding Wire and you get nothing but tire kickers and people that are not the right fit for you, and now you're spending all this time responding to leads that are not a fit, like that's a huge time waste. It's great to get leads, but they need to be the right ones to really book the business. And so I think aligning yourself and really understanding what the media companies and outlets are bringing you as far as value and making sure that it's the right end user that you're going to connect with is a huge, huge factor. And it's, I wish there was like a silver bullet to marketing and getting
right
more business in the way you want it, but there isn't. I mean, even we are a media company and we don't have a silver bullet. Like we're doing the same stuff you guys are doing to get our name out there. And so trust me, I empathize because I'm right there with you.
And I think kind of like what you stated about how like focusing on a couple spots instead of just being like, I'm a destination photographer, take me everywhere. But like focusing, like I know people are like, I'm Paris, New York, or like, you know, like you said, Italy, instead of just being all encompassing, I think is super helpful. And like get that out there to the couples and be like, oh, they really know Italy. Like that makes me feel better about hiring them because they know this place.
So we have a mutual friend who's doing that and really targeting Italy. And she is, you know, they're going, like they went on a 3-week trip all around Italy last year. They're going back for a month this summer and just continually trying to build connections and, you know, whatnot. And so I'm like, yeah, she's going to kill it. She's going to book tons of Italy work because I see her putting in the work that you're talking about, you know, continually staying in front of those vendors, showing the world you have that content, showing couples you have that content, showing couples you know how to travel there, how to get around, how to, you know, like you said, the landscape, the light, all of that too.
Well, and I do think there gets to be a point in your career as a destination wedding photographer when you can go anywhere. You have the business acumen, the travel prowess, whatever you want to call it, to get from point A to point B, and it's easy for you. Like you've got all the things figured out and there is going to be a point where you can shoot anywhere in the world. And I know a lot of wedding photographers that are that and they're killing it no matter if they're in Zambia or if they're in, you know, somewhere in French Polynesia, like they can go anywhere, do anything. And, you know, they're not running into, you know, issues with customs because they've already researched it and they know exactly what they can and can't bring, or, you know, they've got it figured out. This isn't their first rodeo.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think that's like what we see all the time. We're like, oh, look at them. But they, you know, had to start somewhere. But it's good. It's good to see that, you know, changing. Right. Exactly. So are there anything that you see vendors doing that hinder their chance of doing destination weddings or for couples to hire them?
I would say faking it till they make it. Honestly, I think it's, you know, there's places where that works and there's places that that doesn't work. And when you're thinking about the fact that a couple's going to hire you, they're hiring you for one of arguably the biggest day in their life. And if they're entrusting you to take their photos and you run into issues because you faked it till you maked it, maked it? No, that's not right. You know what I mean? Then, you know, you could really not only put a major damper on their situation, but that kind of stuff, consumers talk, they spread information around. Who knows, they could contact USA Today or New York Times and tell their sob story. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm seeing friends and people, colleagues that I know and have known for years, their names being splashed all over every different website talking about lawsuits and this and that, and this couple had this happen, and nobody really knows what the truth is. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I do because I know some of the people that this is happening to, and I know their side of the story. And I'm like, man, like that sucks for you. Like, that's really, really hard to go through. And, you know, I'm not a PR person, so I don't know how to like damage control that. But those are things that really disgruntled people will talk about that stuff. And so I think, you know, make sure that if you are going to get into the destination wedding market, that instead of your first time out being an actual wedding, that you're going out and you're taking a trip and doing some research and really, you know, kind of doing a test run so that when you do market yourself, you're legitimate and not just someone who it looks good on Instagram, but in reality, it's a hot mess.
Yeah. So along those lines, you know, we know your podcast is very couple facing of how to help them plan a destination wedding. Like, what are some of those tips that you give to couples trying to book vendors for their destination wedding? Like, do you talk about pulling from like the, like maybe you're doing Italy, do you hire an Italian photographer or do you fly someone over from your area? Do you fly someone over from anywhere in the States? Like, do you give advice along those lines to couples and kind of what are your thoughts on that?
I love that question. That's such a good question. So yes, we do give advice on that. And I actually just did a podcast with Joanne Grigoli. She's an amazing wedding planner. She's based in on the East Coast and she does destination weddings literally all over the world. And we were talking about that because I always say to couples, the first step in your planning should be finding a wedding planner. Because I do think that for destination weddings, they really are so, so helpful. And they're also going to take the, I use the analogy, I don't know if you guys have ever been to the Cheesecake Factory.
Yes.
You know how they have like the spiral bound notebook?
Of what it is so overwhelming.
Yeah. And you're literally just like, I don't even know where to begin. What page is the salad's on?
Like it's just on like the first two pages because I'm like, I can't. I just can't.
And you're like, your server comes over. Are you ready? Like, give me an hour and a half because I got to read this first. Right. So like that's what couples go through when they first get engaged. They're like, I don't even know where to begin. You know, it's like taking a drink out of a fire hose. There's so many different vendors and to try and vet every single one of them to make sure they're going to show up, they're going to be reliable, they're going to produce the content that you're seeing online. All of those things is really overwhelming. And so the first thing I tell people who are doing a destination wedding, really any wedding, but especially a destination wedding, is to get a wedding planner. And then I feel like they can really help because they're going to take that Cheesecake Factory menu and they're going to dumb it down, not dumb like dumb, but like reduce it down is probably a better way to say it, to an In-N-Out burger menu where it's like you've got a few choices, but they're all in your style. They're in your budget. They know if this person is reliable. They've vetted them already. They've probably worked with them. And so they know what you're it's almost like a personal referral. It is a personal referral. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest thing that I would say to couples in trying to hire their vendors. If they're not going to use a wedding planner, good luck. No, I'm just kidding. But I would say, you know.
Yeah. Actually, I had one.
So I would say, you know, getting to know the vendor as close as possible and having past clients. Get in touch with those ask for some actual referrals. Because here's the thing. Even if they're not going to give you, like, some person who had like the worst experience ever. They're going to give you like the clients that had a great experience. But even with that, if asked the right way, if you, you know, really dig down and talk to the other couples that have used this person, they're going to shed some light that you may not have been able to find through a Yelp review or Wedding Wire. Because usually people are getting onto Wedding Wire or, you know, those review sites to either say this was the best experience or the worst experience. There's very few people that are like, they were okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty rare that's what's happening. So I do think that can be really helpful. Also using references if you have other couple friends that really love their photographer and their destination. When it comes to the location, I would say, if nothing else, if you don't have a wedding planner, you don't even know the area at all, and you're just like, you know, throwing a dart at a map, and you're like, that's where we're getting married. I would definitely suggest, once you find your location, your hotel, your venue, asking for their list of preferred vendors. Because at a very minimum, they're going to at least know, like, they're probably not going to put a person on a preferred vendor list if they are no show, if they're terrible quality, because that is a reflection of the hotel or venue. So I don't recommend going with that on the first go around. If you're not doing a wedding planner and you're not going to do anything else, I would say at the bare minimum, at least ask for a preferred vendor list. And usually you'll have decent luck with that.
Yes. Love that. Yeah. Great advice. So kind of going back for like vendor to vendor, I'm curious if you have any opinions on like, say you're going out of the country and like the how the vendors work is going to be completely different depending on which country you're going to. Like say they just, you know, are a little slower to reply. Maybe they don't, there's a language barrier. Do you have any tips on how a vendor should kind of address that or go forward with that and work together?
You know, it's interesting. So that's a great question. And I recently have had this experience myself. I do a lot of work in Mexico. And what I was learning is that a lot of the hotels, a lot of the venues, they are just, it's like they are redlining their engines. They are going so hard post-COVID. It's like they have more inquiries than they even know what to do with, to the point where wedding planners are like complaining to me saying like, this hotel, like I reached out 5 times and I can't hear back from them. Like, what is going on? Like, is this indicative of the service there? Like, people are frustrated because sometimes like, and it's not just Mexico, it's everywhere. But I think what's happening is a lot of these resorts, they are still not back to the staff levels that they had pre-pandemic. And so they're still trying to service all these weddings. And that's coming from corporate. That's not coming from the service level. That's coming from corporate. And it is not the fault of the wedding planners on these properties or the catering managers or any of that. They are doing the best that they can. And so I think what happens for me is like if I send an email, the response time for me is going to take a lot longer than if I message them on WhatsApp. And so what I've learned is figure out their best mode of communication. And instead of expecting them to just meet you where you're at, meet them where they're at. Culturally, like there's a lot of countries that, like I have friends, dear friends, live in my neighborhood and they're from India. And I will send them a text. They will not reply to my text, but they will reply via WhatsApp. So I think it is like there's certain modes of communication that people use and like lean into, and they're really responsive on that, but not necessarily over the phone or over email or what have you. So I would figure out what those little nuances are and work with people where they're at instead of expecting them to come to you.
I love that. I mean, that's something I hadn't super thought about because I'm a hardcore live by my inbox kind of person. So thinking about, you know, and obviously there's something to be said to streamlining your own business and knowing, you know, your methods and procedures. But for something like a destination wedding that might be a little out of the ordinary for your normal workflow, I think that's just such great advice to meet them where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, too, there's cultural differences. I mean, sometimes, you know, there could be, this is amazing to me, like as Americans, you'd think that we'd figure it out at some point. But there are other like national holidays in other countries where people are off. So just because it's not your 4th of July or Memorial Day weekend or whatever, like it could be theirs. And so I think, you know, just giving them a little grace and, you know, just respect, just like leaning into that respect and leaning into whatever that culture is or whatever, you know, whatever app they're using to communicate, you know, And I personally, like, because WhatsApp is what a lot of my international friends use or colleagues use, before I never used it. Now I have all the notifications set up so I don't miss a single thing, because if I'm doing a photo shoot and, you know, the rental company is like, hey, I want to send you a photo of something we're going to change within the lookbook, like, or the vision board, and I need your approval on it. Before that would have sat there unread for weeks because I wasn't working the way that they work.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I ran into the same thing in Mexico with like trying to schedule a photo shoot, even with the model and like Instagram DMs and whatnot, and being slower to respond. And then WhatsApp was the way to go.
Yes, I've learned to embrace it. Like before I was like, what is this thing? And now I'm like, oh, I figured out the emojis. I got the good thing for us. Good. I'm like flying on there. Yeah.
I love that. And then in terms of, you know, actually going to the place and to the country, like, do you have tips for couples and or vendors on how to learn appropriate cultural nuances of once they're actually at the place to make sure, you know, maybe a couple respects the local vendors, the vendors respect the local property managers and whatnot?
I would say, you know, there's just so much great information online. There's just, you know, especially for travel, I would just Google some things first and foremost. I would also ask around other people who have been there. If there's a wedding planner involved, I would add, and that person is really well-versed, they are most likely going to know some cultures and customs. And, you know, again, if it's something like you're going to Thailand and you're planning an excursion for your entire group and they're going to go, you know, to one of the temple sites and you can't be walking around with like your cleavage out and your shoulders exposed and certain things like that, that stuff is really easy to find. It just takes some effort. And then when it comes to, you know, the vendors and just working with them, again, I think, you know, especially if there's a language barrier, that is definitely going to be the biggest issue that a lot of couples will face. So I would definitely find someone, again, a wedding planner who's bilingual, that really understands the language, understands the cultural nuances. That, I mean, if I feel like I've become like the official spokesperson for wedding planners. I mean, like, I feel like I should start getting royalties here, people. No, I'm kidding. No, but I would really say, you know, finding someone who knows that location well is going to be super, super advantageous. And it's interesting. Like, I have a friend who, she's one of my closest friends on this earth, and she plans weddings all over the world, but she's totally bilingual. And I've been with her to Costa Rica. I've been with her to Mexico. I've been with her all over the world. And when I watch her speaking Spanish, like, she's so she's so fluent that she's like telling jokes and like she figures out what their slang is like right away, depending if it's in like the Dominican Republic, like their slang is different than someone in Mexico is different than Costa Rica or Puerto Rico or like wherever. And so she just figures it out and she just starts cracking jokes and gets everyone at ease, like straight out of the gates. And like her ability to work with vendors, doesn't matter if it's the florist, if it's the photographer, if it's the production or the rental company, she just has that ability, if they are Spanish speaking, to just get right into it and gets them completely comfortable with her. She gets them to trust her right away. And she just has totally successful events as a result of it. So
yeah. And I think kind of like what you said is having the vendors trust you, right? Like you're coming into their space and they're like, who is this person? So to be welcoming and warm, and even if maybe there is that language barrier, just being respectful is going to be huge.
Oh, for sure. And I think everyone wants to, you know, share their culture, share their food, share their music. And I think when, you know, especially as, I don't know if you guys struggle with this, but as a female business owner, walking in the room, we have this pressure to be on in a different way that men feel. And it's like we have this expectation that we have to do it better, stronger, faster, all the things in order to prove our worth in a lot of spaces. And you also have to think about the fact that other cultures can be very, you know, machismo, depending on where you are. And so sometimes, just because we're female, we may be viewed differently than somewhere else. And so, you know, just to be aware of that and maybe not take it personally, maybe just, you know, sit back and, you know, I'm not saying like let someone be a complete, you know, misogynist or anything, but I think instead, like proving that we're going to work hard, proving that we're not here to tell them what to do, but to work as a coworker, not as, you know, el jefe, like, it's, I think that shows that people, it's going to bring people together faster than a wagging finger and like telling them what their business is, you know?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for diving into all things destination weddings. If it's all right, Jennifer, we'd love to move into a time of fast facts, quick questions for our listeners to get to know you.
Cool. I love it.
What is your favorite tool in business?
My favorite tool in business.
I feel like WhatsApp might come up here.
Yeah. I mean, it might be WhatsApp. Actually, I would say it's WhatsApp and also Canva. I'm like a total freak about Canva. There's just so many great things about it. And it's like, you don't even have to be a designer. You can just pop on there. It's so intuitive and user-friendly. We use it for so many things that it's like, we have like multiple different teams and, you know, like design boards and all sorts of stuff that we pull from. So I feel like it's worth buying the pro version.
I'm a big Canva fan too, so totally get it. I probably don't use it as much as you. I need to figure out more ways of using it, but
oh, I like, this is how big of a nerd I am. My son, he's in fifth grade, and his teacher was like, hey, I'm going to do like a adventure camp for the last 2 days of school. And I need volunteers to like do these different things. And so I volunteered to do the scavenger hunt. So instead of just like printing off something on a Word doc, I'm like, oh no, I got to go into Canva and like design it and brand it with her like, you know, adventure camp thing. And like, I completely, like I literally brought it in and she's like, wow, as a Canva.
Don't give away your secrets.
I know, right? She's like, can I have like access to that file folder so I can do things in it? Because now it's all branded and ready to go.
So, and then what is your favorite snack when you're like out working or when you're working traveling. On the blog?
Traveling?
Travel snack?
I love those like little tiny mandarin oranges.
Mm.
I could literally eat them by the bag full. I just bought some at Costco and I think it was like a 10-pound bag and I went through them in like 3 days. Like it's it's all like borderline gross.
Hey, at least it's healthy. So
yeah, I know it's like packed with sugar though. So I'm like, I'm not the person who could ever go like no carb keto. I'm like, oh, no, thank you. Need all the sugar, all the carbs all the time.
So when you're working on a creative project for the business, what is your music of choice?
It depends on what it is I'm working on. If I'm writing, I need music that has no words, or if it's even like an instrumental song that the original song didn't have words. Do you know what I mean? Like if it's like a Spanish guitar version of like a Lizzo song. Like if there were words to it, because then I'm just going to fill in and sing it in my head. And then I can't write because now I'm thinking of other words. And so that's literally creates like instant writer's block for me. So I have a Spotify station called Peaceful Guitar. So I listen to that like in the morning when I'm having my coffee. I listen to that oftentimes when I'm writing. If I'm doing something like that's brainless and it's just like editing photos or, you know, doing something kind of like, I don't know, I can't think of an example, but if it's like a mindless project, then I'm like blaring everything. I love music so much. The only thing, this is going to be an unpopular opinion. I listen to every genre except country. Oh. The only genre that I'm like, I can't embrace it. And I'm sorry if I offend people. But fine. I can't do it, man. I just, no, I can't.
It's all good. Hey, we all have our taste. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so what is your favorite thing to do outside of work? Probably traveling, but.
I love two things. I love hiking. Love it. I just feel like it's such a great way to see a destination and to just be out in nature and I don't know. And my husband loves to do it too. My kids love to do it. We have a dog. So if our dog's with us, like we're just hiking. The other thing I love to do is like jump on a beach cruiser or an e-bike. Cause I feel like that's another great way to see a destination that you can see more than if you're walking, but you're not like in a car where everything's flying past you. Like you can park your bike and like jump into a cafe and like have a quick, you know, cocktail or coffee or whatever. And it just, I don't know. I feel like you really get to see the destination in a different way than you would in a car if you're walking.
Mm-hmm. I agree. What is the best education you've personally learned from?
I would say book-wise, E-Myth is one of the best ones because I feel like I read that very early in my business. And that was really helpful because it helped me scale in a proper way. I reread it about halfway through and realized, man, I missed some of those chapters. I screwed that up big time. Like there is definitely that one was really, really helpful. And it also gave me, because like even now I think about the fact that, you know, they talk about what the myths are of entrepreneurship, right? So he talks about like how many businesses fail at different times, like 1 year in, 3 years in, 5 years in, 10 years in. And so the fact that we're 19 years in, I think when I realize that and I think back to that book, I'm like, we're like one of the, you know, the exceptions to the rule that we've made it this far. And so I think there's like that extra little, because I need it a lot, you guys, like punch in the arm. There's days where I'm like, man, I feel like we're not doing this right or that right, or I'm failing in this area. And then it's like, But you know what? We made it. We made it past COVID. I feel like any business in the wedding or travel industry right. that made it past COVID, like just stop right now and give yourself like a hug, a pat on the back, cry, eat a bar of chocolate, a bottle of wine. Like, you know what I mean? Just the fact that we're even here, like breathing air and putting our business in front of people to buy from or service to or whatever is just an incredible accomplishment. So
definitely. We agree. What is one daring leap you've taken in your business or life?
Well, I jumped out of an airplane.
Literally a daring
leap. Yeah. Literally jumped out of an airplane. I would not recommend it.
Oh.
I did it on my 21st birthday and they pulled the straps that like go across your diaphragm. They hadn't like pulled those snug enough. And so when I did the tandem where you're like attached to like a professional jumper. And when he pulled the ripcord, it literally like knocked the wind out of me and I passed out. So I got like the free fall and then they pulled the ripcord and I like completely am like a dead body, like flying through the air. It was horribly embarrassing.
Is this on video by chance?
Oh, totally on video. Totally on video. Yeah. So
I'm going to go viral now.
Yeah. I'm like
TikTok content.
Oh, it was not my proudest moment. But biggest risk in business, I think just starting a business without investors. I mean, we started this literally in like a home office and we had no like venture capitalist money, no investor money. It was just my savings account, some money that my mom also contributed. And we have been a cash operated business this entire time. We have never taken out a loan or anything. And I don't know that that works for everybody, but for us, I feel like part of the reason we've been able to weather storms like COVID, like the recession in 2008, like, you know, multiple different seasons of all sorts of crap that's happened over 19 years is really because we were fiscally always in the black. Like we never bought anything we couldn't afford. We never threw parties that were going to go on a credit card or a loan or anything like that. We never leased space even that we couldn't pay for. We never hired an employee we couldn't afford. So I feel like for us, like, even though it may sound like that's not risky, like I feel like it also is because you can go a lot further, a lot faster if you have a bunch of money in your possession that someone else lent to you. You know what I mean? And I'm not shaming anyone who has done that because that is amazing. And there's so much hard work that goes into, you know, getting people to invest. And that is a whole nother animal. But for us, I think that also allowed us to make the decisions that we knew were right for the company when we needed to make them and not wait for some board of directors to tell us what we could or couldn't do. And, you know, in a media company, that's, you know, kind of rare. There's not many small businesses in the media space. I mean, I feel like there are a lot of blogs and whatnot, but when we were, you know, printing a magazine, there was very few family-owned national products out there. I don't know that there was one outside of I don't know that there was one. So, you know, I mean, I think that's something that was risky, but also like kind of is part of that gives us our competitive edge in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. What's one thing you feel like you're great at in your business?
Encouraging other people.
Love it. Awesome.
I think that's like the thing that, and it's not like a put on. It's like I think it was my grandmother that told me, like, if you have something nice to say, just say it. And like, so instead of, you know, kind of getting on with my day and not, you know, sending the text message to my digital editor because she just like completely crushed the social media for the day, like I make sure she knows I saw it. It looks bomb and like pat on the back. You know what I mean? I think it's so easy to get bogged down by being busy or whatever. And those words matter. I'm definitely like a person who loves encouraging words. So I think you give what you want to receive in return. So, you know, I think that it's easy for me to be encouraging to other people and say nice things when I see them because it was drilled into me by my grandmother, but also because it's important to me, you know.
Yes, love that. So where can our listeners find you? Website, Instagram?
All the things. So destinationido.com is our website. It's destination, not plural. And it's so funny. People always, they say destinations I do or I do destinations. I'm like, no, it's destinationido.com. And then if you want to listen to the podcast, you just search Destination I Do podcast. And then on social media, it's just at Destination I Do.
Love it. And do you have any announcements coming off of Destination I Do that our listeners should know about?
Well, we did just relaunch our website in February and we love it. It's so awesome. We're like, mostly we love the back end because it's so much easier than the last one. And it's just, yeah, it's really fun. I feel like it's got a much better user experience than our last one. So that's super exciting. We're also, we have like a whole vendor directory. So one of the things that is really important to me personally and to our company is the fact that we're a small business. And so we want to support other small businesses. And the only way to do that is to create affordable marketing options. So if someone wants to be part of our vendor directory, it's only $50 a month. So it's like not a ton of money. We also have things like sponsored blog posts, banner advertising, you know, email newsletters, stuff like that as well. But we want to make sure that we're like affordable for small businesses so that they can, you know, connect with us, connect with engaged couples that are wanting their services. And then also we are in our third season of our podcast. And we're, if you guys have show ideas or want to be interviewed or whatever, let me know. And I would love to have you on. I'd love to have the two of you on. That would be super fun.
Love it. Picking you up on that.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes for everyone. And then in closing, what's one thing you want to dare our listeners to do after listening to your episode?
Hire a wedding planner. No, I'm kidding. Just kidding. Because it's
other
vendors. So no, if they were engaged couples, that's what I would dare them to do. But I would say I would dare them to go out and like maybe even say something nice to their competitor, like just DM them and give them a shout out and just make people feel like they're doing good, because a lot of people are doing a lot of good and they don't hear that. I think that's a thing as business owners is we are the owner. So we don't hear a lot of the good stuff that would be really helpful to hear. We can't really give ourselves a pat on the back because it's us, you know? And so, you know, if you were working at a corporation or something, you've got like reviews from your boss or someone like acknowledging, you know, you did a great job on this project or whatever. And when you're a business owner, you don't get that kind of feedback. Sometimes from clients and whatnot, but I think it's nice to hear it from our peers. So I would dare you to do that. DM someone on Instagram. Just tell them they're doing a good job. If they are. If they're not, then don't tell them anything. But
scroll by.
Scroll back.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on and talking all about destination weddings on the podcast today.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I think Jennifer gave us so many great tips on one, if maybe destination weddings is for you or it might not be, but also how to then maybe work with other vendors from different cultures. And just gave us so many great tips.
Yes, from meeting vendors where they're at and their maybe their form of communication or their cultural practices, knowing what holidays are happening in other places of the world so you're not, you know, expecting things of other vendors that aren't appropriate in their time or space, I think was just something that really blew my mind today thinking about it, as well as just her dare of giving compliments to other vendors who might even be your competition. I mean, Christine and I work in the same space and we have blossomed a friendship that has turned into Dare to Develop. And we think just starting the conversation with a compliment is a great way to go.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Dare to Develop.
We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review if you love today's episode.
Don't forget to check out the show notes at daretodeveloppodcast.com and follow along on IG at daretodevelop.
Catch us next week for more fun as we hear from creatives who have dared greatly in their businesses and developed community along the way.